session number 24658, Real One.
Mrs. Daphne Brown, Real One. And if I could ask you first of all, Mrs. Brown, to tell me something about your life before the war started. Whereabouts would you have been born and raised?
Well, yes, it's a very strange beginning, really. My father was, let me see, Danish, born of a Russian father, and he came over from, I think there must have been something slightly Jewish in the family, because he came over from Russia and landed in Copenhagen, and then married a Swedish lady who was my grandmother, you see. And then they produced a daughter who became a very famous flautist, and she did extremely well. And I suppose I sort of got it from her, you know. And I was born very humbly in a place called Weybridge in Surrey. And then my mother had one daughter apart from me. But I was always obviously born to act. I mean, at school, all I wanted to do was, I either wanted to act or play tennis. And so eventually the acting won. And my father agreed that I should go to the Webber Douglas School of Singing and Dramatic Art.
The Webber Douglas,
School of Singing and Dramatic Art.
Would that have been, you know, a good school in
your
area?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, marvellous. I mean, it's still going strong. And this is where Michael Denison and Dulcie Gray were there with me. And Barbara Mullin. Do you remember Barbara? Yes, Mullin, I think it was. Yes, quite a lot of people, famous people went there, and still do, I suppose.
And what sort of training would you have had in this school? You know, would it have been general education?
No, not general education at all. No, this was after my schooling had finished, you know, and I went there. It was just singing and dramatic art and fencing and that sort of thing, you know.
Well,
and, of course, opera, because Mr. Webber was a dear little man, great pianist, and they were rather grand, these two men, Webber and Douglas, and they had this theatre built in Clareville Grove, and put on operas there, and we used to go to all the public schools, and sort of perform for the boys. And stay with the headmaster, and that's. Oh, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful training. So, of course, I was steeped in Mozart, and also Humperdinck. That was the other one. I loved Humperdinck. Yes. So that went on and on, and
so you were getting trained in all different aspects.
Yes,
of the
I am. Yes, and I was very, very young and very naive, and I was sort of taken up at the beginning by also a pupil of the school who I met there, who was rather grand, and I used to be taken to dinner at her friend's house in Belgrave Square. And, of course, I'd never seen anything like this in my life. It was so wonderful with butlers and servants all everywhere, you know. And I shall never forget sitting at the table one day, and there was a bowl in front of me with a flower in the middle. And I was watching them, and I thought, well, what do you do with this wretched thing, you see? And nobody did anything. They just sort of took it and put it on the sides, which is I did, you see. And then I thought, well, I wonder what happens to that. And eventually, of course, at the end, they put it back and went in the fingers, went, you see. But, of course, I was too young to realise all that. But it was so grand and so, and I've fitted in so well with it, and I loved it, you know, and I just adored it. And then eventually, one day, I'd been there for about 3 years, and I was walking down the street, and Mr. Webber was coming towards me, and he said, Daphne, he said, isn't it ghastly Germany has declared war. So that was that. And then I suppose the next thing is that I went to the Open Air Theatre at Regent's Park. And I was, I think I was there for two seasons, because we did, the first one we did opera. I can't remember what operas they were. And then the second one, it was Tobias and the Angel, with rather a splendid cast. And I remember Deborah Carr was one of the girls in it. And so that was that.
Mm. What was your role? Were you singing?
Yes, I was. In this particular thing, there was a girl who did sing, and I remember having two wonderful songs in this. I don't know who wrote the music, but they were quite beautiful.
Did you find you had to sort of specialise and concentrate on one aspect of the stage, acting, singing, or could you really be an all-rounder then?
Yes, I think you could. I don't know whether you actually... I don't know whether you succeeded. I don't know whether it would have been better if I had just specialised in one aspect of it. But I didn't. I mean, I did the lot, you know. And then I made a list, because I wanted to... I can't remember what happened after that.
This would have been when you were in Regent's Park, and the war had just started. Presumably this would have been the phony war period,
Well, I'm coming to that, because it didn't last all that long, I suppose, because it wasn't the complete season. It was just a one-off, you know. And the next thing is I got an audition at the Kew Theatre for Herbert Fargen's Two Bouquets, which was a musical comedy. And that was absolutely gorgeous. And I remember, now we are in the phony war, and I think I was there all day, and I was sitting next to Eleanor Fargen, who was the most delightful woman you could ever meet. And at the end of the day, I hadn't been told whether I'd got the job or not. And, of course, I went out into the... In those days, you see, the blackout was complete. There was literally no lights anywhere at all, just none. And so, really, everybody had to have torches. I don't even think I had a torch. And I remember I had to... I lived in Weybridge, and I had to change stations at Staines and cross over from one bit to the other. And I was at the top, and I just fell from the top to the bottom. I was so... I didn't know whether I'd got the job or not, you know, and I sort of went home and cried on my mother's shoulder. So, of course, the next day I had to go back, and Eleanor said, yes, you've got it, you see. And that was lovely. I was very, very pleased, because I was one of the leads, one of the two girls in that. And from there, then, I was asked if I would go to Oxford Repertory Theatre Company and play the part at Oxford Rep with someone called Leslie French. Do you remember Leslie French? She was a very famous Puck, I remember, and an aerial, lovely man. And just before it all started, I was walking down the high, and I saw this girl coming towards me, and I thought, oh, gosh, she's familiar. And it was Deborah Carr, you see. And, of course, I've always been terribly outspoken. And I said, my God, Deborah, what have you done to your hair? And what had happened, she was black. She had the most beautiful black hair, Deborah Carr. And it was blonde. Now, you see. So I said, well, why are you blonde? Oh, she said that she'd met Pascal, Gabriel Pascal, at some lunch or other with her guardian, and he came over to her table and said he was looking for somebody to play in Major Barbara, and would she like to do it? Well, of course, she said yes. So, of course, she was full of that. But we didn't like her then. We didn't like her very much. She was rather noisy and loud in those days. But I don't think it was jealousy. But, of course, that was the time of when everybody was coming back. I suppose everybody was coming back from Dunkirk at that time, because they were all coming under canvas just outside Oxford. So I met an awful lot of them, you know. And I met a lot of undergraduates who became my dear friends and who eventually, unfortunately, all of them were killed. It was so tragic. They all either went into the Air Force, you know, and sort of either bombers, just a lot of them. A lot of them were killed. And I thought that they were the people. I mean, one would have been a prime minister, I think, eventually, you know, these marvellous people who'd gone. So that was the end of
Oxford. The Oxford Rep, that was still going strong, was it? You know, during the time of 1940 Dunkirk.
Yes, it was. Mm. It was. I don't know how long after did it close? I don't know whether it ever closed. But it was certainly going strong then. And then I went. I worked there. I mean, apart from working in that the Tubaquets, I stayed on a bit and played in various bits. But I couldn't cope with this different play every week and have it. Oh my goodness, having to learn lines, because I'd been in shows in London where you had about a month to learn your lines. You see, so that didn't appeal to me at all. So I was glad to get away from that. And then, oh yes, then I went back and I was in a review at the Criterion. So this was at the time when there were time bombs and there was the fire on London and everybody was sort of being blitzed out of their digs. And we used to have to sleep in the theatre. And if anybody was married, their husbands would come in. The bicycles would sort of line up outside the Criterion, husbands coming to join their wives to sleep the night. And there was a very famous cartoonist called Felix Topolsky. And whilst we were sleeping in the theatre, he used to come round and sketch us. And then in the morning, I don't know whether it was the Daily Mail or the Daily Express or whatever it was, we'd see ourselves, you see. And we'd no idea that he'd been the night before. So that was that. Oh, then eventually there was a time bomb outside, because the Windmill and the Criterion were the only two theatres in London allowed to stay open, because, of course, the Criterion was underground. And if there was an air raid, the audience had to stay in the theatre. And when the show was over, we just used to, the orchestra started up, and we danced with the orchestra until the all, we danced with the audience until the all clear, you see. So that was that. And then eventually, there was a time bomb outside Jaeger's in, that would be Piccadilly, and then, of course, we had to close. So, of course, the Windmill ended up by being the only theatre in London at that time. Now, what happened after that?
Did you become a Cochrane girl?
Not yet.
I'm sorry, I don't want to rush you. This is all very interesting.
Am I taking too much time over it all?
No, you're not. No, and I'm really going to go back and ask you a few questions.
Right.
But it's lovely that you're doing it your way, you know?
Right, well, yes. So then, of course, came Ensor. And, of course, this was a very big show because Phyllis Monkman was the star. Well, of course, Phyllis Monkman went back to the First World War. And whenever we went around to all these places with various generals and colonels, and they all used to worship Phyllis Monkman because she had such wonderful legs. And she was really quite an old lady, when I was working with her, but there you are. But that was a lovely show. And the only thing is that, of course, being so early in the war, they hadn't, there were no quarters for us. So we used to have to sleep in the quarters where the men were either sort of going off on duty flying or maybe had even been killed the night before. And I fought for my virginity night after night after night because, of course, there were no locks on the door, you see. So they were always trying to get in, but they didn't succeed. So my mother would have been very, very proud of me, I think. Now, the next one was Big Top. This is it, isn't it? This is the Cochrane show. This is with at His Majesty's, with Beatrice Lilly, Fred Emney, Cyril Richard, Madge Elliott, Pat Burke, and the fact that it was a Cochrane show, I mean, he was grand, of course, Cochrane, and he was always there, and he was always wearing his trilby hat. But I don't remember anything very, very much about him, actually, except at the end.
But he would have been an impresario, wouldn't
he? Yes, he was an impresario, of course. Yes, absolutely. And we did a tour with that afterwards as well. Yes, it was. Oh no! It was a pre-London tour. That was it. I wondered why we were out of London, but it was a pre-London tour, and of course he was getting again. I suppose these men from Dunkirk. He was asking them if they would like to come and act as what's the word I want. Not makeup artists,
sort of extras.
And quite a lot of them did, and one actually married my sister, so that was another story. But and then when there was fire watching, because we had to do, that was another thing. We always had to do a bit of fire watching up on the, you know. And you always knew when it was time for Fred Emney and Cyril Richard to firewatch, because all the beer crates used to come rushing in, you see. So that was that. And then there was one... Am I allowed to be bitchy? I did a bit of understudying in that, and I understudied Pat Burke. And, of course, I mean, I was not such a beautiful dancer as she was, but she fell ill during the show, and it was just before a number that I knew that I could do. It was an Irish number, singing. And I brought the house down. They felt sorry for me, you know, that I had to go on suddenly. And, of course, she obviously knew about this because she was in her dressing room. And so the next day, when I got to the stage door, there was a note there, and I've still got it in my scrapbook, and it says, "Dear Daphne, thank you for going on so quickly as you did yesterday, but in the excitement, you may have forgotten that you owe Equity a pound." And I thought, oh dear. So, you know, I was soon learning that... A lot of people are not quite as nice as you think they are. Oh, well, that's it. So, Fargen was putting on this show with Cochrane. I don't know how that came about, because it was a most peculiar liaison, because Cochrane was the sort of grand gentleman, and Herbert Fargen was the most delightful, humble little man you could ever meet, and very brilliantly clever. And he didn't enjoy it one little bit. Anyway, he was going to put on a review, and he asked me if I would be in it, you see. So, of course, one day, I sort of knocked on Mr. Cochrane's door, come in, you see, and I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Cochrane, but I would like to give in my notice. I've been asked by Mr. Fargen if I would go into his next review." And he was livid. "How dare you, he said, how dare you? Nobody tries to get out of a Cochrane show. Nobody gives me notice, you see. But anyway, he did let me go. So that was my experience with... I mean, he was a very nice man, but, you know... That was the end of my Cochrane show.
I expect plenty of big egos in yeah. that business.
Yes, yes, oh, absolutely. Yes, indeed, yes. Still, that was an experience. And, oh, yes, then I went into this Fargean Review with quite famous people in it. I can't remember. Max Adrian, Megs Jenkins... Frith Banbury, I can't remember anybody. And at the end of the show, Fargean always wanted to have a nativity play. And it was most beautifully, exquisitely produced, and it was just lovely. And I was playing the Virgin Mary. And half the audience walked out. You see, they didn't agree with that at all. They thought that was not a good idea at all to have a nativity play in the middle of a well, at the end of a review. But it was so tastefully done. They were quite stupid of them, really.
And would this have been done at Christmas time as well?
That I don't know. No, that I don't know. I would say probably not. It was a review that he was putting on, he said, for himself. I'm going to put on the things that I want to put on, that I'm not told to put on. And that was... he was a lovely man. He was too good for the theatre, really. He was... his whole family were marvellous, I thought. So, where have I got to? Oh, then, of course... I went into a Crazy Gang show at the Coliseum, and that ran for over a year.
Could you tell me who the Crazy Gang were?
Oh, yes, it was not all of them. It was just Nervo and Knox and DeHaven and Page, I think, but it was Nervo and Knox, really, not Flanagan and Allen or any of that lot.
Did they do particular things, though, the Crazy Gang?
Yeah, I mean,
were they noted for particular types of shows?
Yeah, well, comedy, hilarious comedy, of course. Yes, absolutely. Yes. But I enjoyed working with them. I'd never come across quite such... I always thought sort of Nervo and Knox were a bit crude. So I hadn't come across... I hadn't had to deal with people like that, you know. They were a bit too coarse for my liking, but nevertheless extremely funny. But what they used to do in those days, I don't know if they do it now or whether comics still do it, but when we were rehearsing, they would just, because I was in a lot of sketches with them, and they would mumble, and then they would say, business, and then blah, 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 blah. And they went on and on like this, and I thought, well, they're dreadful. I thought, how did they get their reputation? They're absolutely ghastly. So anyway, it wasn't fair on us, because I hadn't got a clue how to deal with people like that. But when it came to the dress rehearsal, they really went to town, and they were so funny that, of course, I'd never met this before, and, of course, I laughed, and I laughed, and I was still young, and I laughed, and I laughed. And instead of liking it, they didn't like it at all. And they came out and said, they came off the stage, and said, "Well, we'll get you the sack. You shouldn't behave like that." And it just happened that one of the other sort of elderly men came up and said, "Look, now come on, you can't behave like that. She hasn't got a clue what you're like. She's never worked with you before. You can't do this. It's ridiculous. She's good, you know." So of course I did stay. And I loved every moment of it. I just adored it. It was lovely.
I suppose all that mumbling was, they knew they were going to say all that stuff.
Yes, and they were bored with rehearsing and business. Well, they weren't going to do their whatever it was, sort of somersaults and whatever they did, you see. So they'd say business and move on to the next thing, you see. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Oh, gosh. Yes, well, that show... Was it? No, that wasn't the show, no. So then, what goes on after that? Oh, and then, of course, we used to have to do fire watching there at the top of the Coliseum, and the man in charge of the fire watching used to say to us, oh, you girls, you're a waste of time. Go back to bed, you know. We'll do it all. We used to get in their way. We were running around with hoses and things. We hadn't got a clue what to do with it. And there we were, sort of showering people down in you know, sort of below, in the streets below. Oh, still, it was all great fun. After that, fire watching. Oh, yes, well, yes, I suppose that was it. We did a tour after the... And this was at the Coliseum, and we did a tour after the Coliseum, and we were at Shepherd's Bush Empire... And the first doodlebug fell and hit the theatre when we were in it. And, of course, everybody was petrified, because by that time the rumour was going around that it was, there was nobody in the wretched thing. And it was awful. It was weird. It was weird, weird. And then the following morning... which was a Sunday, I had to get to Weybridge. I had to go to Waterloo and get from Waterloo to Weybridge, because I had to then get back to King's Cross or somewhere to go up to Manchester or Liverpool or wherever we were going. And so I had to walk from Shepherd's Bush to Waterloo. And people were looting. You know, it was extraordinary because, of course, all the shop windows, you see, had been broken. And there were people, actually English people, looting and taking things out of the shop. So then I walked and I walked and I walked. And as you passed an underground, there were women with their trays, with their Sunday lunches on the tray, taking them into the underground to get away from whatever was going on outside. And then, eventually, the trains must still have been running, because eventually I got back to Weybridge. And my mother always said that I was in such shock that she couldn't get a word out of me at all. I just went upstairs and packed my bags and then went off again because I had to catch this train. So that was that.
Yes. Did it do a lot of damage on the theatre, the doodlebug?
Yes, mostly it was... I've got a feeling it was the... Luckily, there wasn't a show on. We had finished the show. And I think it was the... Was it the... Were we in the front? It was either the front or the back. It didn't destroy it completely. But, I mean, enough to put it out of... I mean, I think nobody worked there again during the war. I don't think so. That was the Shepherd's Bush Empire. Yes.
Was anyone in it at all when it happened?
We were all in, but we were all sort of at the, thank goodness, at the right end, you see. Yes.
Did it make a great crash? You know, were they rather different from bombs, do you think? You've said how eerie it was. You know, this.
Well, the atmosphere, you see, was so terrifying. It would come over, and then it would stop. You see, the noise would stop, and you knew darn well that that was going to come down. So,
end of reel one, Mrs. Daphne.